from Altona to Ascot Vale, Nidri to Newport, and Taylor's Lakes to Tottenham. You're listening to Harness Review right here on 979 FM. Best in the West.
One of the most excited and elated owners at Ballarat last Tuesday night was our very, very special studio guest tonight. And I refer to Father Brian Glasheen, well known in harness racing circles. Everybody knows the good father. And he was the breeder and owner of the first repercharge of the Breeders' Crown in A Bit Ruthless, and I'm happy to say that Father Glasheen's with us in the studio tonight. And congratulations, Father, on the victory last Tuesday night. A tremendous thrill.
Marvellous, Len. Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah.
Right, especially to breed the horse and race it yourself. Tell us the history, because I know the mayor, Ross Abbey, goes back a long stage, and this fellow's part of that dynasty.
It all started, I was ordained in 71, and in the beginning of 72, I was sent to Manifold Geelong, and there was a couple of boys in the parish, Greg Bates and Dennis Lennox, and they had a chance to buy a little two-year-old at Billy Bond's. And they said, we want you to come out to the trials and have a look and tell us what you think. So this little horse was named William Lodge, and I watched it, and they said, what do you think? I said, I don't know that he'll win many races, but the thing, he's a bit small, but the thing I like about him, he tries. So it finished up, I had to put up some of the money because they're only kids, and the three of us bought this horse called William Lodge, and I think we bought it from Vin O'Connor. Paid, it was $1,500, but because we paid cash, we only paid $1,200, won three races with him, and then sold him for $5,000. Anyway, I said to Vin, who bred him and who we bought, I said, that mare, she's got potential. Why don't you send her to a decent staying? Because William Lodge was only by Heytesbury Meadow, who was a colonial horse by Meadow Vance. And he said, I got 14 kids. You can't afford to pay a lot of money for a stallion when you got 14 kids. I said, well, look, don't worry about Dennis, and I'll put up the money, you put up the mare, and we'll breed one together. You pick out one, I'll pick one. And I think I might have picked out Kentucky. He picked out Hilarious Way. We sent the mare to Hilarious Way because she had a bit more height than Kentucky, and we bred Rose Abbey. She was raced a bit like a truck. She really got warmed up. Every time Teddy Demler drove her, she was in the money. Teddy would have the stick on her all the way, and she responded to that. She started favourite in the Warrigal Derby, and Gavin drove her, and she was still only just getting warmed up at the end of the race. I think she ran fourth or fifth, but she went to stud, and she threw eight winners, the first of which was Blur Midge. It won a Ballarat Cup. I think Peter Tonkin might have trained it, and Gavin Ling drove it. But
I saw it win his first race at Horsham one night, Blur Midge.
Did you? Mm. Yeah, well, anyway, there's been five generations now that we've bred, and this is the fifth generation in that family, A Bit Ruthless. I don't know whether...
No, by Totally Ruthless, of course.
Yep.
Well, you're looking for a bit of speed and a little bit of staying ability as well, weren't you?
What happened was... we bred Deltess out of Blur Midge, and she was pretty smart. She won about five, but she ran fourth in her Eldorado final to Misty Maiden, which went 2 weeks later. Within
not a bad horse.
No, 2 weeks later went to Brisbane and won the Australian Derby.
Yes, I recall that. Yeah. Mm.
Any rate, we bred from her. Also out of Blur Midge was Gasser, who won Horse of the Year. Alan Tubbs trained both of those. And later on, Deltess was trained by Glenn Gath, and we had a bit of fun with the Gath family. Mm. And but anyway, Deltess was by Billy Lasseur's Albatross horse. He's only about $1,000 service fee. You probably remember at Oakland's Junction.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of his name.
Either can I.
Vestalba Rainbow? Vestalba Rainbow?
Yeah, correct.
Vestalba Rainbow, that's correct.
That's right. Yeah, about $1,000 service fee. And anyway, I bought a share in Umbro Aussie, and anyway, I put Umbro Aussie over her, and we got a mare called Gemma Rose, who couldn't run out of sight on a dark night, initially trained by Russell Jack, and then Peter Manning. Peter gave it one start and sacked it. And Noel Alexander said to me a long time ago, he said, "Father, you've got to put a bit of speed into that breed." I would have liked Classic Gary, but I think he was dead. So I went to Lucky Camilla to get the high speed. Anyway, I got a mare called Bit of a Gem, and she had high speed, good confirmation, but she couldn't get the last 80 metres. We had two wins and 15 placings with her. And then I thought, well, I've got to put a tough stallion over her, something that'll get something tough. And I thought, there's nothing better than Baltic Eagle, that won the Inter-Dominion in New Zealand, and Jada Rose, and they're both by Totally Ruthless. So I went to Totally Ruthless, and we fluked this handy little two-year-old.
Right. Well, it's interesting you say you wanted to go to Classic Gary, because you did go to Shandon and got Bells of Shandon, who's quite a handy little
one. Yeah, she was. And she's the mother of Shannon Village that I won 12 with. And that's the same family, slightly different branch. Bit of a Gem's great-grandmother's Deltes.
Yeah,
but Shannon Village, I think Deltis might be the grandmother or something like that.
Yeah, so Bells of Shandon and Gemma Rose are sisters, aren't they? Half-sisters.
Gemma Rose, they would be. Yeah, I think that's right.
Of course, lots of accolades must go to Philip Chirkop, a local Backers Marsh trainer who's done a terrific job with this fellow for you.
Yeah, well, he's done a fantastic job, not just in the training of the horse, but the care of the mother. And there was an old bloke at Preston years ago who used to say, "Half the breeding's in the feed'em." And Phil fed the mother up well, so that the foal was well cared for in the womb. And from the day he was born, I wasn't sure whether he was white or what he was when he was born. He was very white, but each day he got darker and he turned out to be a chestnut. And Phil looked after him beautifully, not only as a foal, but... I think I forgot to tell Phil I was on radio too, but anyway.
We're listening.
Phil's done a fantastic job looking after the mother and looking after the horse.
Right, looking at the race last Tuesday night, he drew the pole. You had Rodney Petroff driving.
Yeah.
He got a glorious run throughout. He actually showed the speed at the start, but allowed Handsome Major to cross, and it sort of got on the steel a little bit, and Rodney gave him a terrific run, and... coming to the home turn, he looked to be really going well, but he was in a tight pocket, and you were probably getting very anxious, but in the straight, the leader shifted out. Actually, I watched it very closely today, and Gavin was more intrigued in watching what was coming down the outside than watching what was on the inside, and this fellow just dashed through in the shadows of the post and gained the prize.
He did. Gavin was watching all the others, and I noticed that with the replay too. Rodney did a mighty job, because there wasn't much room, and that's why he hit a peg, and we had to wait at least 15 minutes for the all clear. It was rather scary, and I think Phil might have said to Rodney, "I hope you didn't go inside the peg."
A mile run at 2:08, which was very impressive as well.
But his run before that was probably more impressive, because he sat outside Mazzini at Bendigo, and over... 2190, they think they went 158, which is extraordinary time for two-year-olds, I thought. And that, he was in the death seat for the whole race, and he was there till the furlong pole, and he just got a bit tired. And the run before that at Ballarat was real good too.
Yeah, that was a good run, went second there.
Yeah, he went 156.
Behind Soho Wonder.
Yeah, and didn't get a real good passage. He was locked into the 1-1, leaving the back, hit a wheel, lost a length or two, and stormed home to run second.
I reckon you're going to have a great deal of fun with this horse.
I think so too. I reckon he might have been better as a three-year-old, but he's still not right as a two-year-old. And the beauty about him, he's got brains. He's very intelligent, and he's placid. Like, you know, he's very, very intelligent, and... He's a quick learner.
I think it makes a big difference. I mean, there are, you know, every now and then we have someone on who's telling us about their horse who was, you know, gangly and didn't know what to do and was all over the place, and then all of a sudden one day it clicked. But there's a lot more that tell us that, you know, when we're talking about good horses, that they just knew what they were doing from day one, and they were, you know, cooperative and, you know, well-mannered. You like them to have a bit of fight, but... you know, getting them, especially when they're young, if they're willing to do what you want them to do and to sort of be active participants, then it's a lot easier.
Yeah, he's been remarkable, and the first time or two he went the races, he was so placid and so relaxed, and he got a bit toey at Ballarat, a little bit sweaty. He started to know what it's all about, I suppose. But his first couple of runs, he went to Geelong and he went to Bendigo, and he was like a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old. He was so relaxed, you know.
Yeah.
Mm. No, as I say, you're going to have a lot of fun. Best of luck with him. Now, let's talk about the life and times of Father Brian Glasheen. Of course, you were always going to be involved in harness racing from the moment you were born, I reckon.
Yeah, I went to the trots, I don't know, I was 3 or 4 years of age, to Woodend, and I think that was...
Of course, growing up in Charlton?
No. Mum and Dad came from Charlton, but they moved... After they got married to Preston, they bought a little school shop, lolly shop, with a dwelling behind it, and opposite the Tyler Street State School. And so they ran that little shop. They sold nibs and blotting paper and exercise books and all those things, and ink and groceries. And, they settled in Preston. But I grew up in Preston, but I remember Mum and Dad taking me to... Woodend trots on Boxing Day. I think it might be just during World War II, either during the war or after the war. And I can remember as 3 or 4 year old going to the Ascot trots, pre-showgrounds, with Mrs. Ritchie. That's Des Ritchie's mother, and Adrian Ritchie's grandmother. And and I was there the opening night of trots at the showgrounds, and the opening night of Mooney Valley in the opening night of Melton.
Yep. Right, of course, the Glasheen name was synonymous with harness racing. That's where I'm getting back to the Charlton and Central Victoria now.
Yeah, well, see, there was a few Glasheens. There was Jim Glasheen, who was a foreman for Smedley, a galloping trainer at Caulfield. His brother, Ted, the grandson of Les Carline, a grandfather of Les Carline, he was the stud master and... chief trainer, I suppose, with Weavers at Bort. Bort was the centre of trotting in those early days. And
that was in the Charlie Robinson days, or long before Charlie?
Before Charlie,
yeah.
That'd be Charlie's father.
Mm-hmm.
But Uncle Ted, that was my grand uncle Ted. He educated Tommy Butterworth and Billy McKay and people like that.
Mm-hmm.
Dad, of course, was born in Charlton, and Dad's father was Paddy Glasheen, and he had the Belmont Stud Farm at Manjurang and then transferred it to Huntley. But they, Ty Brothers had a clearance sale of a big stud at Elstonwick, near the Elstonwick Hotel, there in Point Nepean Highway.
Yes.
There was a stud there, and they had a lot of American horses. We're going back... just after the turn of the century, you know, maybe 1905 or 1910 or something like that. And they bought a mare. I don't know whether she was in foal, but they bought the mare, an American mare, a Blonde Grattan was her name. And they also bought the stallion, First Voyage, both imported American horses. And Grand Voyage was the combination of First Voyage over Blonde Grattan. And he turned out to be a champion. He rarely raced against... trotters. He mainly raced against pacers because he was too quick for the trotters and was ahead of his time. Like in those days, the trotters had run about 2:45, but he had an average winning rate of 2:13, which it was
phenomenal
in those days. Grandfather won a double at Harold Park, or it was called Epping in those days. Epping, but it's the Harold Park track, and I don't know whether they call him Bonnie at home, because I suppose he was out of this. Blonde Grattan, which was by Bond Voyage, I think, or Bond, some, any rate, they call him Bonnie, but when they took him to Sydney, there was a New South Wales horse with the same name, so they changed his name to Grand Voyage, and he raced, and it was rather fitting, only a year or so ago, Gordon Lockman and his team, Len, you were probably part of it too, he was admitted to the Hall of Fame.
Yes,
and,
absolutely.
It was a great thrill, you know, because he won 37 races, and he, I suppose the big thing was when Grandfather took him to New Zealand in 1921, he won the Otahoo Cup, which was interesting. He was off 36 yards behind scratch, and in that same race were New Zealand legends, Man O' War, Blue Mountain King, Globe Derby, they were all in that race, and the trotter beat all the paces.
Would that be on grass?
Yes,
it was.
Yes, on grass, flat tracks, no camber.
No, right.
Mm. And it seems slow today, but when you consider it was grass on a track without a camber, they went 4:31 for 2 mile, and that's
that's not bad.
Yeah, well, that's 1921. And yeah. So it's we're not far short of 100 years, in 90 something, and. It's sort of quite. He, I think one of these most amazing things. He held the track record at the Melbourne Showgrounds before the Melbourne track was the Shelgut track that you and I knew had lovely turns, lovely camber.
Mm.
But prior to that, there was a flat track, and it was only about two and a quarter furlong, 2.5 furlong, without any camber, and he trotted 2:16, and it took. Somebody like Encircle or Deck Boy. Deck Boy was Rothiger's. Encircle, I think, was Des Mann. It took about 30 years for that to be broken, and that was broken on the new track, the camber track. But he ran 2:16 on a flat track without any camber, which is extraordinary, really. You know, like what he'd run on the tracks today would be hard to tell.
Oh, absolutely. Now, Brian, you've told us about going to the Wood End Trots at 3 years of age. What progressed after that?
Oh, Dad was busy running a grocer shop, a lolly shop, and he didn't get much time to mess around with horses. But when he got out of the shop, I think we got a horse called Flying Rack. And I'd help Dad when I was a kid going to school, and I remember one day we were up at Marylands in Reservoir, and there was a bloke called Billy Burke. He had a track up there in amongst housing. It's Marylands. And at any rate, they used to get truckloads of shavings. So Dad would go shaving. Of course, I'd jog the horse around, and being a bit adventurous, I'd run the wheel over the edge of the shaving cape, see how far I could get up without tipping the cart out. But anyway, I got too ambitious, and I tipped out. Oh, Dad was furious because there were houses being built everywhere, and Dad said that bloody horse will put his foot in a hole. I think his name, it wasn't Golden Satin, it was a chestnut horse, I can't think.
Golden Satin came along later than that.
Yeah, he did.
Mm. I think Jack Gilchrist had Golden Satin in latter years.
Yeah, he got it off us. We made it. And the only reason Jack got him is because I'd gone to the seminary and Dad got sicker going to the races or going to the track by himself. And when we went to the race, he always used to like me to look after the horse. Mm. And he had nobody to help him. So he finished up, he sold him to Jack. And then Jack couldn't get him going. Jack had to give him back to us. And Dad got him going again for him. And they plonked G.D. Wilson on him one day at Kilmore, and he bolted him.
Yeah. You mentioned before about going to Ascot, which is, of course, they built a housing commission on the site there. Would there have been thousands of people there at that time, in that era?
I was too young
to realise.
I've seen photographs there of the crowds. There were big crowds, and I remember there was a nice grandstand. I remember going up in the grandstand, but I don't remember, because I was probably only about 3 years of
age. Yeah.
See, that would have been, I was born in 38, so that's be during World War Two.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I'll tell you who did well there at those shows. Was Dad's uncle, Dougal McGuinness.
Oh, yes.
And
he had a very good trotter, too, at one stage.
Prediction. And
Golden Moments, I think.
Yes. Well, I think Prediction was even better. But George Gath used to talk to the young drivers and trainers, and they'd say, who was the best handler of the trotters? And George used to say, Dougal McGuinness. And they said, what do you say, Dougal? He said, he's the only bloke can get a cow to trot.
Oh, right.
But he'd cross-hobble them, and he put an anvil on their front feet. Moments had 26 ounces.
Is that true?
26 ounces. Yeah, 26 ounces on his front feet. Yeah.
Is this where your love of harness racing began, or was there a little lapse before you came back to it?
Oh, no. My lapse was there. In fact, just before I went to seminary, I said to Dad, can I drive that mare at Healesville on Boxing Day? And he said, what do you want to drive it for? And I said, I'd like to drive a winner before I go to the seminary. He said, what makes you think it'll win? I said, I don't know, but I said, I can't drive a winner sitting in the grandstand. And, right, well, you better drive it in the trials. And, you know, she won the trial and then went and won this race beating Debbie Turner's Quinlan now, I think.
Yeah.
Debbie's grandfather, I think, A. Turner.
Yeah.
And I know, I remember it because... He came off 25 yard and went round and I let him go.
This is at the old Healesville track.
Yeah, in amongst those beautiful hills inside the galloping track.
Mm.
Anyway, I waited and waited and waited and waited. Anyway, I'd come up the straight and I'd just give her one hit on her rump just before the line. She won.
How old would you have been then?
Oh, I was 20, 25, you know. But anyway, after I went over the line, she actually broke. And so... Alan, I think his name was, he put in a protest, reckon I gained ground, and the steward said, what do you think happened? He said, what about you, Mr. Clash? And I said, oh, I think the only reason she broke, we'd passed the winning post, and I relaxed, and she just rolled out of a gear because I just sort of let her go. And
you dropped your hands.
Yeah, and they said, well, that's our impression too, so they fined him £5. For a frivolous protest.
Oh, geez, that would have added insult to injury.
Yeah, but that was a thrill.
Something very dear to your heart, Brian, is the Gower Park track in Preston. I mean, you've obviously got fond memories of that.
Oh, yeah, Dad was the foundation president. But the original committee meetings were held in our house, and that people on the committee were Keith Greenwood, who became a stipendary steward.
Yes, Frank, who was the first secretary of the Metropolitan Country Trotting Association.
Frank Hoban, whose boys or grand sons, well, his sons are trainers and drivers, but he's Craig, is it?
Craig? Yeah, Craig, his grandson.
That's his grandson. Mm. There was old Mr. Ritchie, Sid Ritchie. That's the father of Dares. Dez was there, Billy Gibbo, Keith Gibbo, and there was another Sid Ritchie. I think he was SK. He had Carry Bar that went in, ran in an intermediate. Lovely.
He used to race in yellow colours.
Yeah,
with
and he was a chestnut, lovely chestnut. Mm. Well, I think we called him Young Sid, and there was Old Sid. Sid was the a wise man, but very quiet man, very rarely opened his mouth much. But we had those meetings in our home, and we built that track with voluntary labour, the hub rail. It was a hub rail, and we had cinders. It was a bugger of a track, really, because it was so loose. It was a cinder track, and eventually ended up being crushed rock. It was a half mile, but it had four right angle bends.
I knew it did.
And Dad said...
It was very tight.
He'd say, roar at them going into the turn and roar at them coming out. But he said, don't let them off the pit. They'll jump out of their gear. You know, that's the big difference with the horses today and the turns. The horses just glide around the turns and you don't have to hold them together like we did in those days. Yeah.
And, of course, the those Gower Park trolls on a Sunday were highly patronised, weren't they?
Yeah, well,
and they used to run an occasional Gymkhana there too.
Yeah, well, Dad was... in charge of those. In fact, I remember one day I drove in two races. I drove the Trotter Maid of Honour, and she used to go well for me at the showgrounds and the trials, but she didn't handle that track well. It was too loose for her. But we had Pat Cooper's first horse, Gleaming Light, and I was in the main trial there this day, and with horses like Dickie Gibbs had... or Quambi Gold, I think it was, and Tennyson Girl.
Lassie McTavish.
Yeah, apparently Baston's mare, she was a record...
Oh, yeah, Bruce Baston.
A record holder at the showground over a mile. Payloader won a Hunter Cup.
Yep.
And Grand Monarch. Now, Grand Monarch should have been giving him about 2 furlong start because he'd won... Like he was about an M30, you know, like it was and turned out to be a great sire.
Bob Collinson had him.
Yes, correct. And I was off the front, and Dad said, "Don't hunt him out. Just let him amble out and get in on the fence and stay there, and see what happens." And but he said, "If he drops the bit, you might have to give him a clout." And right, he dropped the bit coming up the straight at the bell, And so I give him a clout, and he jumped on the boot and went about a furlong, and then he started dropping the bit again. So I start to hit him, and I hit him for the last three furlongs, and I got up and I ran second at Grand Monarch, and he was a qualifier, and it was Grand Monarch should have been giving him a 200-yard start. You know, it was a big thrill, actually.
And, of course, you were a regular at the showgrounds, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, the showgrounds. Like, we'd go to the showgrounds not only for race nights, you'd go to the trials. Half the people in Ascot Vale and Flemington would go to the trials.
Every Wednesday night, I think they used to be.
Yeah, they were big nights, and they were the days when George Gath was king, and Gordon Rothiger, Gordon Rothiger, and Jay Barron Jr., you know, like they were the three.
Jack Barron Jr.
Well, Jack, even though he was his son...
Bruce.
Even though he was Bruce's dad, he was junior because old Jack was still around.
Jack Barron Sr.
Yeah.
I used to look at that old... driver's board at the showground, you'd see Jack Barron Sr., Jack Barron Jr. listed.
Yeah. Well, Dad used to say, he said, oh, I hate driving against the Barron. I said, why? He said, well, you don't know which one's trying, whether it's old Jack or whether it's young Jack or Donnie Guy. And he said, they're all pretty good.
Yeah,
they were great days.
You've seen some wonderful days in harness racing, haven't you?
I saw Cardigan Bay.
Yep.
I remember... the night he arrived at the showgrounds, and I saw him come in. He had a rug on him, looked like a draft horse. He had mud right up to his knees, been out of Doreen at Gordon Rothiger's.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to Dad, I said, I've seen Cardigan Bay. I said, it looks like a big draft horse. Any rate, when he got out on the track, he was anything but a draft horse, like he was a machine.
Mm-hmm.
And he was be off 36 or 48 or 60 yards behind, scratching top company, and he'd get out of the barrier like a machine, and he'd run up to the back of them, and he was one of the few horses that you could pull out and make three or four runs in a race, like P.T. Wolfenden.
Yeah.
Pull out and run up. There's a gap. He'd drop in on behind him. And he'd look a gap further. He'd pull out, run up three or four horses, drop in. And he never got fired up. Like, he sort of didn't go fierce. He was like, he was human.
He was a remarkable horse. I mean, for what he went through, he got that fractured hip that night that he fell over in Perth.
Mm.
I think it was in Perth, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, and they said he would never ever race again, and little did they know, he in latter years, he went to America and was the first horse to win $1 million in stakes.
Yeah, he came back the following year, won the Inter-Dominion at Wavell, within 12 months.
Yeah, on that tight circuit, he came off a massive back mark.
Yeah, and I forget, somebody... got tipped out in that race and ended up...
Charlie Parsons, I think.
In the dirt sheet of, I don't know whether it was Billy Shin's free horse.
Yeah, I think it was.
He was marvellous. Cardigan Bay, you know.
Is he the best horse you've seen?
From what you've told us, Grand Voyage probably was.
Well, he was the great trotter, but I'm having a little mental brockies, but there's somebody... what's Lance's horse?
Sokiola or Smoking Up?
Sokiola, Smoking Up.
Smoking Up, but I think there's another one there I can't think... I've got a mental blockage. Gamelite, of course, was good. There's one horse they never give him a mention, but he was as good as any of them, that's Silver Peak. Silver Peak, he was a flying machine.
Long before my day, but he used to give away 200 yards, 300 yards at the start, didn't he?
He was like Donny, Vinny Knights was...
popular arm.
Yeah, well, Silver Peak was the popular arm of that era, really high speed. Like he'd get left, he'd be off 24 yards, he'd lose another 48 yards. The crowd would be booing and booing and booing, and Culbert would just creep up, and if he last at the two furlong space, he'd pull out behind 12 or 14 horses and go past the whole field in 100 yards.
Yeah.
And then the crowd would go crazy, you know. The good horse from Queensland.
Blacks are fake.
I'd say he's the best horse I've seen.
Blacks are fake, really?
I always said it was Cardigan Bay until Blacks are fake. But I think... the great galloping trainer, you know, he came from South Australia. He trains with his sons in Sydney now. He trained for the Chicken King.
John Hawkes
said about Blacks of Fate that he is the best horse of any breed because he did what no horse can do. He won at the top level for about four or 5 years in a row. Like did he win four into Dominion?
The only horse to ever win four into Dominion, and probably will remain the
Auckland
only.
An Auckland reactor cost him another into Dominion.
Yeah, he did. Like, he did, absolutely, at Queensland, on the Gold Coast that night.
It was just truly remarkable how he come back and ran second. Like, he could have won five into Dominion. So, they're the two best I've seen. Mm.
Speaking of into Dominions, they're another thing that's very, very close to your heart.
Yes, too right.
You love, look, I love Inter Dominions, but you just relish with Inter Dominions.
Oh, yeah, it's the ultimate, you know. Like, they'd be lovely to have a horse good enough to run an Inter Dominion. You know, they're fabulous. Yeah.
What's your thoughts about the way it is now? I mean, it's in my way of thinking, it's nothing. They're nothing like they used to be.
No. I think the way Perth did it the last time, which is the old one.
Yeah.
That's what I sort of love. I'd prefer that, you know. And I think Perth, if they get their chance again, they'll do it again the same, you know.
You've made so many friends, not only through harness racing, but through the being involved with the church, with the harness racing people who are involved with the church as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's funny, in my own parish, some call me Brian, some call me Glash, some call me Father, but round the trotting track, whether they're Catholic or what they are, they nearly all call me Father.
Well, it's just something they've grown up with or picked up with. I would imagine.
The trotting people have been marvellous to me, and I'm, mixed with all different types of people. Like, you know, Bob Conroy, I had a horse with Bob. We got one up there at the moment, but we'll leave that a secret at this stage.
Oh, good. I look forward to finding out when we get off air about it. What, when the time comes for you to finish what you're doing with the church, I mean, you can't go on forever. We saw what happened to Bob Maguire. Will you be more devoted to harness racing after that? Will you plan to go to a lot more tracks, to a lot more carnivals?
Possibly. Actually, in the church at 75, I have to put in my resignation,
right,
which I've actually done, but I've said to the Archbishop I'm happy to continue with his permission, and he's written back and said he'd defer my
retirement,
and he'll look at it, I suppose, from time to time, year by year. So my officially, I should have been retired this October when I'm 75, but I'll continue for the time being. You know,
well, I'm sure lots of people are happy about that.
Mm. Mm.
Well, look, Brian, it's been an absolute delight to have you join us in the studio here tonight. I mean, there's so many stories that you could tell. We could go on for hours and hours, I'm sure of that, but we've only got limited time. Speaking of Perth, we've got to go over there very, very shortly, but thank you so much for coming in and making our night a special one tonight.
That's marvellous, Len, and perhaps I'll finish with a word of let's remember Bobby Kane, who was much loved by all of us and a great journalist and someone we all loved, and I think Bobby helped me a lot to publicise the harness racing mass and get it off the ground, him and Tom Danaher, and there's been a lot of wonderful, I made a lot of friendships, a lot of wonderful people, you know.
As I say, Brian, thank you so much for coming in and joining us tonight. The very best of luck with this fellow, A Bit Ruthless, through the Breeders' Crown Series.
Yeah, you just better pray for a good draw for Saturday night.
You could do a better job than what I could on as far as that. But
I'm supposed to be a professional. I think the Lord will take more notice of the amateurs.
Look, the very best of luck.
Thanks, Len.
Thank you, Brian.
Been my pleasure.
Thank you so much.